Stand at the edge of the Bosphorus Strait, and you can almost see history repeating itself. On one side, Europe fragments under the weight of migration and debt. On the other, Asia surges with ambition and capital. This narrow waterway, which once channeled the wealth of the Silk Road, now watches Chinese container ships and Russian warships pass through daily, a living reminder that geography never stopped mattering. We convinced ourselves that smartphones and stock exchanges had made borders obsolete, that globalization would flatten the world into a peaceful, interconnected whole. Instead, technology has done something far more unsettling. It's resurrected the world Marco Polo knew 7 centuries ago, where vast Eurasian empires competed for influence across interconnected trade networks, except now they're armed with cyber weapons and hypersonic missiles. NATO once crystallized Western values into military might, complemented by the EU's commitment to law over ethnic nationalism. Victory in the long European War, 1914-1989, seemed to vindicate the West, but Europe's prosperity depended on demographic isolation from the Muslim Middle East, maintained by Soviet-backed dictatorships functioning as barriers. French historian Fernand Braudel saw this coming. Europe's real southern frontier was never the Mediterranean, but the Sahara Desert. As refugees flow northward into debt-burdened societies, populist movements surge from France to Hungary. The European project, designed for moral redemption after centuries of warfare, now confronts questions it was never built to answer. Meanwhile, Eurasia coheres into something unprecedented, not a unified political entity, but an interconnected space where conflicts, trade, and influence flow across traditional boundaries. What geographer Halford Mackinder called the World Island, Afro-Eurasia as one continental mass, has become operational reality. Physical borders exist on maps, but power now operates in gradients and networks that make those lines increasingly irrelevant. Digital communications creates a paradoxical world, simultaneously more connected and more claustrophobic. Groups like ISIS exemplify this, radical reactions to modernity using Twitter and encrypted messaging to promote an imagined medieval past. Cyber warfare, economic interdependence, and transnational threats have rendered traditional alliances inadequate. Marco Polo's 13th century journey through Eurasia traced trade routes from the Persian Gulf to the South China Sea. Today, China's One Belt, One Road initiative deliberately follows his path, echoing the Mongol Yuan dynasty's preference for economic influence over military conquest. The modern Eurasian landscape is dominated by faded empires, Turkey, Iran, Russia, and China, whose imperial memories shape contemporary ambitions. Russia and China face a unique challenge. Their territories extend far beyond ethnic cores into Siberia, Xinjiang, and Tibet, maintained through what diplomat George Kennan called contingent necessity. If they let go, rivals fill the vacuum. Turkey and Iran have transformed imperial legacies into stable nation-states. Turkey under Erdogan pursues neo-Ottoman policies while suppressing Kurdish identity. Iran navigates between pragmatic moderates seeking integration and hardline revolutionaries defending ideological purity. Both possess institutional strength to avoid collapse, though their competition over Kurdish regions will intensify as Syria and Iraq fragment. Central Asia reveals the most dramatic power shift. The 5 former Soviet republics have pivoted towards China, whose economic engagement, $50 billion, dwarfs Russia's, $30 billion. Chinese corporations control nearly a quarter of Kazakhstan's oil and over half of Turkmenistan's gas, reclaiming ancient Silk Road influence through modern financial power. Russia's Eastern Orthodox imperial legacy isn't historical curiosity, it's operational doctrine. Putin understands that empire is the Russian state's default option, a continuous thread from the Tsars through the Soviets to today's Federation. He particularly grasps how Russia's historical expansion into Ukraine weakened the once powerful Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, a lesson directly informing his modern calculations. His primary strategic challenge centers on the Black Sea basin, where Russian interests collide with Ukraine, Turkey, Eastern Europe, and the Caucasus. This geographic nexus unites the seemingly separate wars in Syria and Ukraine into a single coherent strategy controlling critical waterways, energy corridors, and trade routes. This contested space forms the Intermarium, stretching from Estonia through Poland and Ukraine to the Caucasus, where American and Russian interests directly clash. American global power depends on preventing Russia from Finlandizing these states into coerced neutrality. Russia's strategy doesn't require tanks. Moscow employs sophisticated combinations of energy politics, information warfare, cyber operations, and economic leverage to compromise democratic institutions, devastatingly effective as Western solidarity phrase. Bulgaria exemplifies this dilemma. Despite NATO and EU membership, it remains contested through energy dependency and cultural ties. Military technology has rendered the Himalayas strategically obsolete. Advanced missiles reach major cities within minutes, while stealth fighters and surveillance drones patrol once impenetrable borders. Chinese and Indian navies now traverse each other's traditional spheres: Chinese vessels in the Indian Ocean, Indian ships in the South China Sea. China's String of Pearls strategy establishes deep water ports at Pakistan's Gwadar, Sri Lanka's Hambantota, and Myanmar's Kyaukpyu, encircling India. The Maritime Silk Road has shifted global trade center, with the China-Middle East-Africa nexus now representing over 50% of global trade volume. Yet China's maritime influence remains primarily coastal. Myanmar maintains strategic ties with India and the United States despite Chinese investment. Both China and Russia exhibit imperial overstretch while facing demographic decline and economic imbalances. Internal weakness often drives aggressive external posturing, visible in China's South China Sea assertiveness and Russia's near-abroad interventions. Afro-Eurasian integration through digital networks, energy pipelines, and high-speed rail creates unprecedented connectivity, enabling China, Russia, and Iran to develop alternative supply chains circumventing American influence. China's dominance in 5G and artificial intelligence positions it as the emerging system's dominant force. America's position as a maritime power mirrors Britain's historical role. We operate from the largest island off the Eurasian continent, guaranteeing global maritime commerce and securing vital choke points from the Persian Gulf to the South China Sea. Our unique advantage in the Asia-Pacific stems from being a distant power without territorial ambitions. Countries like Japan, South Korea, and Vietnam view American presence as stabilizing because we seek influence, not territory, a status growing more valuable as tensions with China intensify. The Asia pivot strategy must encompass the entire navigable rimland of Eurasia, following historical trade routes from the South China Sea through the Indian Ocean to the Mediterranean. Key relationships include India, Diego Garcia, Singapore, and Gulf states, creating a chain of access points for projecting power. Our military strategy should emphasize air and naval capabilities over land forces. Iraq and Afghanistan demonstrate how ground interventions lead to costly occupations. Instead, focus on domain denial, preventing adversaries from controlling critical maritime spaces through autonomous systems, precision munitions, and special operations forces. Dealing with Russia and China demands strategic patience. Our primary interests are defensive, preventing attacks on allies and blocking hostile Eurasian hegemons. However, authoritarian regimes under Putin and Xi cannot easily absorb political defeats without risking internal instability, demanding nuanced approaches that balance deterrence with diplomatic engagement. American foreign policy has always balanced realism and idealism. True realism isn't cynicism, it's historical awareness, recognizing that order precedes freedom, interests precede values, and power balances matter. The collapse of British, Ottoman, Habsburg, and Soviet empires left a vacuum American power quietly filled. Now we're entering an age of comparative anarchy as U.S. influence wanes amid urbanization, population growth, resource scarcities, and domestic fatigue. This retreat coincides with destabilizing trends, weakening states in the Middle East and Africa, aggressive regional powers like Russia and China masking internal weakness through external aggression, and a fragmenting European Union. Technology accelerates these shifts through social media and cyber warfare. Globalization hasn't erased geography, but sharpened it. Syrian conflicts affect European politics. Chinese maritime claims threaten Asian stability. As the Westphalian system weakens, we face a new medievalism of cities, empires, and tribes. Communications spread instability while hierarchies crumble, from political parties to international institutions, creating vulgar, populist anarchy beyond elite control. America must practice probabilistic determinism, acknowledging geographic and historical constraints without oversimplifying. As we navigate a multipolar Eurasia, we must balance restraint with engagement, avoiding both imperial overreach and neo-isolationism. Distance no longer provides safety.